cigarettes, yes, dear Rabbi. So I do the virgin ships. Minutes after day to Kai, from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made stronger by the hand of the Almighty. Say we forward in this generation, triumphantly. So won't you help to sing another song of freedom? 'Cause all I hear redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, none of them can stop Japan. 'Cause along shall they kill our prophets. Yes, we stand aside and look. Someone said it's just a part of it. We got to fulfill the book. So won't you help me sing another song of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption song, redemption.
Welcome to part two of episode 14 of the Ferguson Response Network podcast. We are a weekly podcast devoted to supporting people looking to create lasting social change through sustained civil disobedience and civic action. I'm joined in this episode by my amazing co-host, Ricky L. Hines II, who's a Los Angeles native, U.S. Navy veteran, avid Googler, blogger, founder of the Americans United Again movement, and host of the Americans United Again podcast. And he also is a co-host of the AUA Hope podcast with the lovely Sherelle. And we were lucky enough to be joined this episode by Shirley and Clove, co-hosts of the Chonilla podcast up in Canada, and you can find them on their website, chonilla.com, or go to Facebook /Chonilla, and you can find them both on Twitter at Chonilla or at Sherasaurus for Shirley or at Clovisaurus for Clove. And we are going to jump right into our conversation surrounding the international and global phenomenon that is anti-blackness and how we see white supremacy showing up in countries around the world. Enjoy. Well, we wanted to take this international, this episode, since we had some international guests with us, and talk a little bit about the global effect of anti-blackness. The Black Lives Matter movement, you know, taking flight, so to speak, and showing up and showing itself in other cultures and other countries, because the fact remains that in every country on the globe, the darker you are, the worse off you do when compared to your lighter skinned counterparts. And that's just a fact. I actually met with a bunch of delegates from Rieja o Será Morta, or Morto, depending, which is React or Die. It's a movement in Brazil, which is sees horrific. They have like 1,000 Michael Browns a month in Brazil. Oh. I'm not even kidding. The police kill. I'll just read real quick. Lena Aceveda at the hearing of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, the OAS, for dealing with young black death in Brazil. React is life presented data showing that the genocide of black people is a reality in their country. Daily, according to Amnesty International Brazil, 82 young black men are murdered in Brazil. In 2012... the 56,000 dead, that's how many people were killed by police then, 30,000 of them, 77%, were black. To address the summary execution by persons by the police forces of Brazil, Hamilton remembered the recent slaughter village Moses in Cabula, Salvador, on February 6th, when the prime minister executed 13 young and was even praised by the governor of Bahia, Rua Casa. So it's pretty, it's really bad there. And one of the gentlemen who is kind of runs the organization spoke so strongly about, you know, how when he hears the people of Ferguson talk about what's going on there, he feels like they could be talking about Brazil so easily. You know, the connection that he feels and that black liberation worldwide is necessary, and how important it is to link our causes, because everybody's feeling it. And I think that this is true when you think of the face of Brazil. It's not a dark skinned face at all. You know, even during the last World Cup, they actually limited the number of dark people they would allow in the stands at televised games.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason, much of the reasoning is because black faces on TV don't do well. It's such a fucked up thing to have to admit, but it is the truth. And there's a reason behind it. And it's that we've exported our white supremacy throughout the entire globe. Mm-hmm. And you know, largely with the help of Britain, we've pretty much infected the entire planet.
Yeah, I like to say that white supremacy is the grandchild of colonization.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Directly. And then I did pull a couple of articles about your guys' wonderful country. I saw a few things. What's going on in Winnipeg, man?
It's not true.
It's not true. Nothing bad is going on in Winnipeg.
There's always something bad in Winnipeg, especially with First Peoples.
Obviously, yeah, that's what they were referring to there. And this was Thelma Favell, who's Tina Fontaine's aunt. You guys know about the Tina Fontaine story? I don't know if that's was national news or not. The 15-year-old child from the Saakin First Nation who was wrapped in plastic and tossed into the Red River after being sexually exploited in the city's core.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's currently, I think, over 2,000 unsolved murders of
women,
First Nations women in Canada. And our prime minister has like ignored it. Like there's been an outcry from the native community to get some help with this.
Yeah.
And he's been ignoring it.
Maybe we should like screw over our natives too, so that you guys learn in 10 years?
Oh, wait. Too late. Too late.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
We already did that.
Lessons. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail that. Sorry.
Nope. How did you derail it?
No, you didn't.
No, that was me derailing.
No, that was Ricky derailing it.
Honestly, I have to joke about shit like this. Otherwise, I'd be punching walls.
We have to keep it punchy here, because otherwise we'll just go nuts. But yeah, so that was one thing that I saw. And then I had a list of the 10 most racist incidents in 2014, Canadian edition.
Yeah.
Passive aggressive edition.
Oh, wow.
So number one is Subban's Sochi snub. When the top defenseman of the NFL gets just a few minutes to play at the Winter Olympics, you've got to wonder. But when a Canadian fan flies halfway across the world to support the sole Afro-Canadian player on Team Canada in blackface, it boggles the mind.
Yeah. Damn it. That really is passive aggressive ass that racism. Is, that's
I'm telling you, dude.
Everything.
Man of yours. Wink.
Holy
I'm a
shit.
Fan of yours. You want a banana? Like, really?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Really?
Start calling Canada passive aggressive U.S.
At least, I mean, like I said, we do see it. At least there's an upfrontness in the United States. Like it's upfront. It's out there. You know what I mean? But here, it makes you, you know, you really have to look and listen closely and between the lines and how things are said. Or yeah,
the power legacy too is a little different.
Oh my gosh!
So number two, Brampton Batiste. The organization Immigration Watch Canada distributed a flyer entitled The Changing Face of Brampton with two images. The top photo shows a group of mainstream Canadians, commonly known as white people, while the bottom photo shows the diversity of the Greater Toronto Area has incarnated in such a rich part of Ontario. It seems the hate-filled group spent time and money denigrating their non-mainstream neighbors in Brampton and at York University. Interesting.
Wow. That's a move.
That's some passive aggressive shit too, man. It's all they're gonna be like this.
Like you, eh?
What the fuck, man?
You stand over there, eh?
Okay, number three, odious offenses toward Olivia Chow. She soldiered on stoically in the wake of her husband Jack Layton's passing. She aimed for the mayoral seat in Toronto, Canada's most multicultural city. Despite the Hogtown slogan, Olivia Chow faced xenophobic remarks, racist cartoons, and an aide deriding her for not speaking English at home. Torontonians are waking up to the fact that multiculturalism alone is no antidote to racism. Number four, shame after Ottawa shooting and the hysteria and confusion of the Ottawa shooting that paralyzed Parliament Hill. The nearby University of Ottawa went on lockdown. The campus coffee shop gave refuge to scared students, except the one who was tall and black. In a blog, the ostracized student recounted his experience, quote, maybe to the second cup cafe staff, my life doesn't matter as much as that of the others, or worse, he thought that I was the shooter. When push comes to shove, one's true character is revealed.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Number five, Saguenay saga following vandalism at a mosque in Chicoutimi. What the hell with all these names you guys have up there?
Chicoutimi.
Chicoutimi. Okay. Rural Quebec's overt xenophobia did not settle in 2014. The Fédération des Québécois de Sochi, I don't know if I said that right, anti-Semitic and homophobic stickers littered mailboxes and public signage in Saguenay. No word on when the quote-unquote investigation will yield tangible results for fearful residents of color and Jewish citizens.
When was that? What year was that?
This was last year.
Okay. Maybe during the, what's it called? That thing that they were, the charter. That
The Quebec Charter Values. Mm.
That brought up a lot of racism.
Mm-hmm. Number six, wrongful writing in Winnipeg. Winnipeg mayoral candidate Robert Falcon Olouette exposed the racism he faced during his campaign. The 18-year veteran of the Canadian Armed Forces was reduced to his racial heritage via abusive comments were posted online. He also received hateful emails about his Aboriginal heritage. Go back to drinking. That's where Indians belong, one said. It's amazing how citizens of a nation which borrowed an Aboriginal word to name itself, founded on Aboriginal land, sends so much vitriol to an upstanding Canadian because of his Aboriginal heritage. Mm. Number seven, blackface blunder.
Kind of like all the racism in Los Angeles towards Latinos.
Pretty much. Which, I don't know if you guys heard Twit Prime, that they had this psychopath on from New Jersey, of course, yesterday, talking about white genocide yesterday.
No.
And he was going on about how, you know, Mexicans need to stay in Mexico and Africans need to stay in Africa and all the countries are for white and white people need to stay in white countries. And they were like, well, what's a white country?
Right.
And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, what is a white country? Elon's like, what's an example of a white country? And he's like, is this a white country? He's like, yes, this is a white country. He's like, but you stole it from brown people, so that doesn't really
work. And you
work
brought black people
out.
Over to help you.
And then you
it.
Brought black people here, so fuck are you talking about right now? Oh my
and
god.
And then when you figured it'd be what cheaper, you bred them. You bred black people.
Mm-hmm.
You allow the Chinese to come here and build your railroads. Nah, buddy. Nah, it's in a white country. This is about as much of a melting pot as you can fucking imagine.
Oh yeah, there's a song.
You know,
there's
the
a
white
song.
People get all the killing.
Oh, wait, hold on. Let me see. I'm gonna play this song because it's beyond.
I've said this to Shirley before that, and this is, you know, it's not gonna sound too pleasing, but I've always seen the United States based on like a culture of just you know being shamed for allowing somebody to take something from you.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there also is this idea, and it's a very American idea, that if someone gets something, it means that it was taken from you. It's a false narrative, but it's what is definitely here. It's the same reason why patriarchy is so strong here, because if women get ahead, that means men are getting pushed back. It's bullshit, but that's the narrative that they spin. All right, let me just play this song. Okay. I think this is the right one.
Wait, please tell me this is a joke.
No, it's not a joke.
Please, God, tell me. Okay.
It's not a joke. There's even a remix of it. They were playing it on Twim. It's so bad. It's so terrible.
Can I like this? Can I use the soundboard for just
go ahead, Ricky.
Wow, cool. Wait a minute. The fuck?
The fuck?
I know. It's terrible. It's so bad.
I'm just so shocked. It's so shocking at my age that this is going on.
Just to be clear, this guy was bragging about some countries that he said were white.
Yeah, he's saying that white countries are for everyone. India's for Indians, and Mexico is for Mexicans, and Africa is for Africans, and white countries are for everyone.
Tell that to South Africa.
Yeah.
Tell that to South Africa. Tell that to Nigeria.
Tell that to Australia.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm.
For real.
Oh my gosh.
All right, here we go. Blackface blunders. Quebec schools plan a Christmas play where kids appear in blackface. Not to be outdone, Montreal's Vidieu Vert Theater's year-end review includes a sketch in which a white comedian appears in blackface. Worse, the Franco-Quebec pundits and TV producers defend it vehemently. Is there nothing more insulting than members of the dominant culture instructing minorities how to feel about their own depiction?
Shirley, there was a play. Doesn't blackface still go on TV here?
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Particularly in French programming on television. It's fucking bananas. I'm like, I feel like I'm on the Twilight Zone. Like, wait a second, did I just see what I just saw?
Yeah, you'll see a comedy special, and you're like, get the fuck out.
There was a play where somebody did blackface because they were playing P.K. Subé. Like the person plays the character, and I thought to myself, they couldn't get a black actor to play him.
Seriously,
like really?
Wow.
You know what, Stephen? And maybe I'm alone on this one, but like. This is where I talk about like it being insult to injury, because not only are you oppressing the fuck out of me, but then you're teasing me while you're doing it. Like, if you were teasing me and I wasn't being oppressed, I wouldn't give a flying fuck. You think the Irish or the Scottish give a fuck or the Germans give a fuck when you make characterizations of them? Not really.
But you're also talking about people that were not white at one point and then were made white at another point. So there's that.
Yeah, if you're at the top of the power structure, you're not allowed to make fun of anybody else. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, that's the truth. I'm beautiful, so I can't make fun of ugly people. It's just how it goes.
Yeah, and you got to put up with the fact that you're going to be made fun of because you're the power structure.
Yeah, and it's okay. You'll live. Yeah. Speaking of cruelty,
nice
kids.
And cushy.
Kids can be cruel in Canada, too. An 11-year-old boy in Westport, Newfoundland, had to transfer schools because of the extreme and racist bullying he has endured in his community. Torrance Collier is the only black child in the community. The bullying at his school was so bad that he was under constant supervision and had to use a separate washroom to avoid harassment from his classmates. One parent claimed that the real bully was Torrance. Quote, he's not the victim. He's instigating a lot of this to the other children, end quote.
It's aggression. Yeah.
Is being black now a form of provocation in Newfoundland? Unfortunately, yes, the same attitude prevailed in Georgina, Ontario, where students hurled racial slurs as they beat a black schoolmate. In both cases, there seemed to be no repercussions for this bad behavior. Mm. We only have two more guys, so.
That's that was the we did talk about that one on the show.
On the show, yeah.
It's racial, yeah.
Yeah. Prejudice makes public made public by Montreal Police Union head. Montreal's diversity is an asset, not a threat, said Mayor Denis Coderre. But the head of Montreal's Police Brotherhood Union, don't you just love those brotherhood unions?
Mm-hmm.
To me, anytime you put the word brotherhood in something, it's bad.
Yeah. It's a bunch of good old boys.
It's not a good thing. Doesn't agree. Yves Francoeur was quoted as saying that Montreal police officer safety might be at risk because of the city's quote multi-ethnic character. Asked why he thought Montreal police could be targeted in an attack like the Brooklyn shooting, Francoeur replied, "We worry in Montreal on account of its multi-ethnic character. On account of the attacks in Ottawa and Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu." I said that right. Both the city's cited tragedies were perpetuated by heritage Canadians born and raised in Canada. So were the RCMP killings in Montcalm. But that didn't stop the perception
no fucking sense.
What a sideways way to say things would be great if we were all white.
Yeah, let alone those two attacks were not by a fucking minority whatsoever. Oh, they were made by white people.
Right. That's what he's saying. That's what the article is saying, is that the two tragedies that he talked about were white people did them, which is something we say all the time here. It's like, well, who does mass shootings here? Oh yeah. White dudes, just saying. And then the last one was multicultural minister's misadventure. Canadians minister of state for multiculturalism, Tim Upal, Upal had a difficult experience at an Edmonton tennis club. The minister and his family overheard a woman express disgust that the Sikh Canadian family was allowed membership using a racial slur. She went on to suggest that Upal was probably unemployed. For Craig and Mark Kyleberger, it was an ugly reminder that Canada may be the land of multiculturalism, but we are not immune to racism. Mm.
I'm just having a flashback to where I grew up in Scarborough. And in Scarborough, it's very South Asian.
Yeah.
And there's a large South Asian population.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's where the racism was directed.
Mm,
at the South Asian.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where it's they the kind other, of directed whatever, it. Yeah, whatever's otherwise. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just to give some numbers about Canada's Aboriginal citizens, Aboriginal Canadians, and some numbers comparing them to African Americans in the United States.
First peoples.
First peoples. Okay, I'm reading off of the thing here. Original. So first peoples.
Yeah, I know. But I just loved it when I heard first peoples.
First peoples,
like,
is good.
It makes so much sense.
I'm telling everybody about this.
So in Canada, first peoples have an unemployment rate of 14% compared to U.S. African Americans at 11%. The unemployment rate versus the national rate, they're 2.1 times Aboriginal Canadians versus 1.9 in African Americans in the United States. Their median income is pretty equal, $22,344 for Aboriginal Canadians and $23,738 for African Americans.
Holy fuck.
The median income versus the national average, 60% for Aboriginal Canadians, 74% for African Americans in the United States. The incarceration rate per 100,000, 1,400 for Aboriginal Canadians. It's 2,207 for African Americans. The incarceration rate versus the national rate, this one is really fucking scary, for Aboriginal Canadians, it's 10 times higher than the national rate. It's 3 times for African Americans in the United States. The homicide rate.
Wow.
Per 100,000, we quote unquote win this one. 17.3% for African Americans in the United States, but it's still 8.8% for Aboriginal Canadians. The homicide rate versus the national average, 6.1 times for Aboriginal Canadians versus 3.7 for African Americans. The infant mortality rate, 11.7 per 1,000 births for Aboriginal Canadians, 12.4 And when you look at it versus the national rate, it's 2.3 times for Aboriginal Canadians and 2 times for African Americans. Life expectancy for Aboriginal Canadians, 72.8 years old. For African Americans, 74.9. Versus the national average, Aboriginal Canadians have a 91% life expectancy. 95% for African Americans. Their dropout rate, 23% for Aboriginal Canadians, 8% for African Americans, and versus the national average, Aboriginal Canadians at 2.7 times the national average versus 1.1 times the national average for African Americans.
Yeah.
So apparently the First Peoples multiplier is higher than the Negro multiplier.
Apparently.
Yeah.
And they're both terrible.
Yeah, well, and I think part of that is what you guys talk about, which is this passive aggressiveness of it too. This heading even says, for a country so self-satisfied with this image of progressive tolerance, how is this not a national crisis? And that's what happens.
It's very well hidden.
You lull yourself into that, like where it's like, hey, everything's fine, everything's fine. And then these marginalized communities just become more and more downtrodden because of it.
Yeah, and it's very hidden in terms of like First Nation here in Canada. I don't know about the U.S. on how there's such a, it's like two different worlds, but all within the same country, but we're all in the same country. And if it's not for things like, you know, I really encourage everybody, if you're Canadian or even not Canadian, if you live in North America, definitely check out that Eighth Fire series. It really opened my eyes on how much I did not know
how First Nations
are treated, mm-hmm. not just in Canada, but I'm sure in the U.S. mm-hmm. as well.
Oh, definitely here for sure. Our Native American population is, you know, decimated on so many levels. All of those same numbers are really bad, and they are being killed at the same rate as African Americans by police in this country as well. I mean, it's really bad.
Yeah.
No problem, because we're all equal. Everything's great.
Yeah, it's all good, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Forget these Freakonomics.
Forget it. So we'll turn to the Caribbean. Let's dive in there. Now, Hispaniola as an island is a very interesting exercise in racism. With the Dominican Republic on one side and Haiti on the other, they have...
They love each other.
Yeah. Works out really well as they conveniently have, clashes on a regular basis. 2 weeks after a Haitian man was lynched in the Dominican Republic, thousands marched through the streets of Port-au-Prince on Wednesday demanding justice and denouncing rising anti-Haitian sentiment in the neighboring Spanish-speaking country. Despite our diversity, despite our differences, we are a country, we exist, and we deserve respect, said Roman Catholic Monsignor Pierre-André Dumas, who helped plan the march. We are neighbors sharing the same island. The question of racism and barbarism needs to be finished with on this island. And this was just in February 25th of this year. So this just happened. This lynching occurred. It's the second time in 4 years that Haitians took to the streets to denounce perceived racism in a neighboring country. But unlike 2011, when Haitians marched to decry Jamaica's treatment of Haiti's under-17 soccer players amid a cholera outbreak, this show of solidarity comes amid heightened tension between Haiti and the Dominican Republic and rising concerns about mistreatment of Haitian migrants in the Bahamas.
Yeah, the level of how they treat the Haitians, not just in the Dominican Republic, but
all over.
Yeah.
The Caribbean in general. And
even in South Florida, which is basically the Caribbean.
No, for sure. And it's interesting to me, when I was talking about, the darker you are, the worse you are. You know, the colorism in the Caribbean is like, it is, beyond, because the lingers of colonialism are much, much more recent. Jamaica, for example, became independent from Great Britain in 1962. And so as we were going through our civil rights movement here, they literally got independence and are still a part of the British Empire. The Queen is still on their money. So the lingering of colonialism is just, it's dripping In the Caribbean, and all of the islands have these same issues of colorism. And then, you know, that's what happens is if a nation is targeted and it's like, oh, well, that's where the dark people are, then that's the bad nation. And so then you have this culture that's cultivated that ostracizes, as you said, otherizes people. It's terrible. It's terrible. So tell me, Shirley, like, have your parents talked about this at all, this issue, both with the Dominican Republic and just generally speaking, of how Haitians are treated and how that plays into all of this kind of anti-blackness on a global level, them being immigrants themselves?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've never gone into details as to why of not getting along. But then you look at there's this idea, and like you said, the colonialism and in Dominican Republic culturally. I mean, they consider Spain like the motherland.
Mm.
I mean, just that statement alone. You know, so it's those kind of those ideas that kind of clashes between Haitians and Dominican Republic and so many Haitians. I mean, there are Haitians right now, I think there is a law that they pass where they're in limbo, where they're born in Dominican Republic, but then they don't have any rights as citizens right now.
And that's based on what, their parentage or...
Yeah, because their parents immigrated or were refugees. You know, they go over there to work on the fields, right? To work on, I'm not sure if it's tobacco fields or in the farms or these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And then so these parents who are refugees in Dominican Republic, they have their kids. And now their kids are in limbo. They with this new law, I think this is a law that passed a couple of years ago. And they have no citizen rights whatsoever. They can't go back to Haiti. They're not. That's a difficultness because they're not born there,
right?
And they don't have any rights in Dominican Republic. So they treat Haitians like dogs, you know, like crap. And meanwhile, it's the Haitians in Dominican Republic when you go. You go even to what are they called? You know, vacation spots and everything like that. Resorts. That's the word I was looking for. It's mostly the person who has the crappiest job more likely is Haitian.
Mm.
And they have, you know, they won't share a tip. They'll tell them, no, you're not supposed to give them tip.
And then the factory owners, they're, if not white, they're very light skinned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so any type of the crappiest job, it's the Haitians that are doing it in Dominican Republic. And now, so a lot of them with no citizen rights, it's crazy.
Mm.
Wow.
Wow, that is disturbing. Really disturbing. Yeah, I mean, the colorism and anti-blackness is, like, really strong. You know, I tell stories all the time about my mom, you know, thinking of herself as different from African Americans. There's this, like, you know, she's just like, oh, those black people. That's right. She'll use, you know, like those black people. Because that's not her. She's not one of those black people. And it's part of anti-blackness that you know, my mom emigrated to this country and it's like, oh, they think of them as bad. So I should think of them as bad. And I should definitely make sure I'm not thought of as them, you know, because that would be terrible because I'm not like them. I'm good. And my grandmother, when she emigrated here, my grandmother, is of Syrian descent, even though she's Jamaican and has been, in Jamaica for many, generations, but her family is from Syria, or her ethnic background is from Syria. And she emigrated to the United States at one point, and she didn't even make it a year. And I would ask her, you know, why did you go back? And she said, honestly, Leslie, I just couldn't take being a second class citizen when I was a first class citizen in my own country. And she had to leave. She was like, fuck this. And she went back. I mean, she was a justice of the peace and she was a pillar of her community. I mean, she had a personal audience with the Pope when he came to Jamaica. I mean, she was a very important person in Jamaica. And she was like, she came here and she was just, you know, like the dirt under everybody's shoe, like every other black person. And she was like, fuck this. I'm not going to deal with this. I'm out.
What do you feel as Americans, how do you see the younger generation, and not just black, but in all different cultures and races, do you get a sense of hope or get the sense of, ugh, this is going to probably continue for another 20 years and then it's going to shift?
I'll tell you, I have a lot of hope for the youth of color. I think that they are very focused, and I think that they have their eyes wide open with regard to the systems that try to hurt them a lot more than previous generations, even my own. I'm kind of a cusp person, but I'm not a millennial and I'm not quite Gen X. I'm right on the middle of both of those.
You're Gen Y.
Then they also have access to like a vocabulary to help describe what's going on.
Yeah, they kind of, this awakening is happening because of them and because of their frustration and because they see, you know, how ridiculous this is. Because truth be told, what Ricky said is totally true. You know, when you were fed a diet of respectability politics, that there are things you can do to not be oppressed, and then you see someone who's clearly done everything right, they were voted to the highest office in this nation twice, still get treated like shit because of his color, it kind of blows up that entire notion completely. It's like, well, you can't really say that anymore, because I don't know how much more respectable you get than being the president twice. Like, he went to Harvard, he was he went to Harvard Law School and in the Law Review president, and he was a community organizer and a senator, and holy shit, he got married, he has two beautiful children, and he got voted to be the president of our entire country and quote unquote the free world, and he's still treated like shit because of his color. So I think for them, it's like, for older people, it's like, oh my gosh, Obama, he's president, it's so amazing, it's such an accomplishment. And for younger people, it's like, whoa, look how they're fucking treating Obama, writing letters to nation states to undermine negotiations that our president is undertaking. The fuck.
Yeah.
You never see that with a white president. Get the fuck out of here.
And this is the thing, even if it did happen, there would be so much of an outcry that it would backfire ridiculously. The blowback from that wouldn't even be worth it. The blowback from it now was even pretty bad, considering that he was black. If he was white and they did that shit, guys, like, they went as the two biggest reasons they fuck with our president now is, one, because he's a Democrat, and the reason that they can get away with fucking with him so much is because he's black. They're fucking with him for a very political reason. They just know what will get under people's skin, and that's racism, because they understand just how deeply racist we are.
They know how to push those buttons,
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely. They've been doing it for 50 years now.
It's a hot topic. It's something that gets people going in the country.
It draws those lines in the sand. You know, you're either with us or against us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the Dominican Republic has its own racism issues aside from just their issues with their neighbors in Haiti. Mm-hmm. They treat their black citizens horribly there. And much like I mentioned in Brazil, they don't want that to be the face of the Dominican Republic. And so that comes up quite often. And what Shirley was saying also happens in a lot of the decisions on who gets to be the waiter and who gets to be the dishwasher and who gets to work the front desk and who gets to wash the clothes in the resorts and things like that come up. So it's a very widespread issue. And then
I got a question.
Sorry, get to your question, but just wanted to say real quick, you're making me think of my dad right now, because sometimes my parents, they're retired and they spend their winter in Haiti, and they're always set to clove like, oh man, you need to come down. You're going to be a rock star, like a king almost, because of your whiteness.
Oh
my. But it's sad, but it's true. And he, my dad's all about like, let me take advantage of your whiteness,
right?
Let me take your dad. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
I'll be that.
Hey, sorry, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say, like, how responsible are we as a nation, like how responsible are we as like to say, like, let's say you look, you have trade agreements with a country that is, outlaws gay marriage, right? But that's not a value that you have as a nation, So what if you cut off, like, you know, your trade agreements with them, like to say that we don't agree with that philosophy? Do you know what I mean? Or is that like imposing your beliefs on someone else? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It's a sore and tricky subject because, one, there's human rights abuses virtually on every country on the planet.
Right.
And two, you have to kind of finesse that one. That's not one that you can draw a line in the sand and do and make an educated decision.
Right.
There's just so much economically that going on now, because we have such a large global economy, that it's not really all that tenable. And I very sincerely think that it was done that way for a reason. You know, if you export white supremacy across the globe and then everyone's practicing it, even black countries, then, you know, why not? Why would you not? It holds a system in place.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So turning to my beloved Jamaica, and as I mentioned earlier, that the colorism is significant there as well. We see this play out quite often in the Miss Jamaica World beauty pageant, which is, I would say, you know, almost a holiday in Jamaica. We do very well in the Miss Universe pageant, and as we did this year, I think we came in fifth or something like that. But, you know, there's this running joke that if you have light skin and semi-long hair, at some point someone will suggest that you run for Miss Jamaica World if you live in Jamaica. I've heard like 16 or 25 variations of the joke, but literally it's like doesn't matter what size you are or if you're traditionally beautiful in the face or anything or that your body looks great. If your skin is lighter and your hair is longer, somebody will suggest it at some point. Oh, you should consider. You should go run. You should get a sponsor. And so that's really big. And I found this this blog by this woman, Leah. It's a baby blog. It's about her and her family. Her life as a black mom. And she's talking about her son, Noah. She says, I grew up in Jamaica where the term black wasn't really used, perhaps because 91% of Jamaicans are primarily of African descent and have the power to classify themselves. And the classification they choose is simply Jamaican. Jamaicans of non-African descent tend to not differentiate. Growing up, I never heard Chinese Jamaican or Indian Jamaican. It was just Jamaican. Now, colorism exists in Jamaica, very much so. Terms like browning and coolie are used to differentiate between ebony-skinned Jamaicans and those of a lighter tone. But colorism in Jamaica is nothing like racism in America, where discrimination has strong roots in the legal system, economics, and housing. Although the term black wasn't used in Jamaica, I knew how to code switch when I spent summers in the Midwestern United States to visit my mom's family. There, I was black. She says she attended a Christian summer camp with black kids from inner city Detroit who marveled at my accent and begged me and my siblings to teach them Jamaican patois. We traded snacks, banana chips for Cheetos, tamarind balls for now and later. I was young and innocent. The term black was new, cool, and fun. Then I got older. I remember watching American news in the kitchen with my mom one hot day. The newscaster was talking about minorities. The look on his face was so casual as he said the word, but it sounded so ugly that it stopped my heart. The pictures flashing on the across the screen were of brown skinned people, blacks, Latinos, Asians. Minorities, I thought. It was the first time I'd heard the term. Did it mean that they had a minority of intellect, of influence, of significance? Troubled, I asked my father. He laughed, then explained the term meant that they were part of an ethnic group that was numerically less than whites, who were the majority. I nodded, but the term didn't sit well with me. When I turned 17, I moved to the United States permanently to attend college. I went to a very conservative, heavily Republican, majority white evangelical Christian college. And that is when the full pejorative word of the force of the word black hit me in the face like a ton of bricks. She goes on to say that she then had a son. And here's the thing. My son is not black. The color of his skin is brown, as is my skin, as is my husband's skin, as is your skin. Even the darkest people in the world are not black, but a deep, rich shade of brown. And I wonder if one day this precious boy will look up to me and ask why I call him black when he is indeed brown. And so she is wondering if she wants to, even though she knows that black is beautiful, She can't deny the legacy of the term, and is she ready to introduce my son to that legacy and incorporate him into it? I'm not sure. She finishes. So it's interesting that she's kind of looking at this classification and if she wants to introduce her son to it. But I question, I mean, can you protect your son from it? Just because you don't say
that's,
it?
That's the thing, is it becomes a health risk.
Right.
It literally becomes a health risk.
Yeah. You have to say
it. Because not knowing.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why respectability politics are so harmful, because it's literally like blaming someone for not wearing their seatbelt when they're in a car going 160 miles an hour when it crashes. No matter what the fuck I was wearing, I'm dead anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't a seatbelt or no seatbelt, that's not a pleasant thing to have to deal with. The crash is the problem. The fact that I'm going 160 miles an hour against my will is the problem.
Yeah.
Not wearing my seatbelt.
Shirley had a real conversation with Ronan one time, and she explained to him basically what, like, it doesn't matter how you're defined as yourself, you're going to be seen a certain way. You're going to, you know, like the mm-hmm. the world is going to see you as black.
Yeah.
How did he take that?
I think he understood. There was a look in his eyes of confusion. But I had to explain to him that, you know, you are black and white. Because I would hate that my kids would deny both sides.
And also, he wants to be like his dad, as he should. I mean, he would, right. You know, it's not fair to him to not allow him to identify with Clove and Clove's heritage, because it is part of him.
Right. And it
sucks that society would force that even concept upon him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
And I've mentioned that. I said, you're going to be in situations where, as long as you know who you are, that's what's important. Mm-hmm. And when you step outside those doors, there are people who are going to label you one thing. Yeah, because that's just the way that our brain is structured. And that's the world that we live in today.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how confidently you define yourself.
Yeah.
You're still going to be initially defined outwardly.
So the way I communicated to him is that if the world just labels you one thing, whether... And like I said to him, out there, you're considered black. That it's a projection of the world and how a person is thinking. It does not define who you are, because you know who you are, and that's what's important. As mm-hmm. long as you know who you are, and that is the fact that you are black and white, that's something that you must remember, and never let anyone try to convince you otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Let them label you.
It's a pretty
accurate
statement.
Yeah. Let them put, you know, they can label you whatever you want, and just kind of like, you know, be aware of that. That's just...
They will try to define you.
Yes. Yeah. That's just the human beast.
Right. That's how the power structure does. It sees something in the minority, and it tries to define it.
Exactly.
Right.
And I told him, like, you're going to be treated as such. It will be a situation that you might not understand, and that's just the world's going to treat you a certain way because you're black. And I haven't been too deep in it because he's 14. But as of next year, we're going to go a little deeper.
Well, you'll know when he starts asking more and more questions about it, right? Yeah.
And also, I get a sense of how deep I need to go, too, because when I talk to him about... Well, how do your friends or kids at school talk to you about your race? Like, do you have kids tell you that you're black? Do you have kids tell you you're black and white or and things like that? And he's like, we don't talk about that. It's not a big deal.
Mm.
So that's like, okay.
That's concerning to me, though. And that's like when we were talking about how millennials view race. That's the only thing that really concerns me, is that so many millennials misunderstand race, especially the younger ones now, that it is alarming. Like they've bought in because they've been taught of this post-racial America, and now it's coming to a head that, oh shit, you know, all the things that I've been taught are probably wrong. But they buy into it initially. I bought into it initially.
Mm.
I'm a millennial. I'm one of the older millennials, but still. like I bought into it for a good while. Mm-hmm. It's alarming. That's the only thing that scares me. Mm-hmm. I'm very glad. I'm very happy to see that there are others who are doing extremely amazing work. But on the whole, like it does scare me.
The fact that they don't talk about it to each other as young people.
Yeah, that because the conversation needs to be had, because his friends need to understand what he goes through, so that when they're in a situation where, okay, an officer's being racist,
right,
an officer singles him out, right, they need to be able to fucking stand up for their friend, because he has no way of defending himself.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I see what
you're saying. That's where that problem comes from.
Right, and they would assume that it's just because to them, they wouldn't think that the officer would do anything bad. Mm-hmm. Or right. That it's they like, would make like, a bad decision.
It's like being the only black kid in class and all the white kids are telling you that nobody's racist and, you know, nothing's racial and we're all
right.
equal.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny because two friends of mine that grew up Unitarian Universalists were having a conversation, two black friends of mine. They grew up in the same congregation and they talk about during their teen years that it was really hard being in the youth group at church. Because they were like, you know, when you're teenagers, it's already awkward, but there's this kind of, you know, you're pushing maybe some flirtatious boundaries, certainly physical contact starts to happen, things like right. that. But because they were the only black kids, that was kind of something, you know, they were in a room full of people that claimed they loved them. Because it was a church, but at the same time, they were like, yeah, but we're not going to interact with you in that way.
Right.
And it made them feel like they were the ugliest person in the room. You know, it gave them this really like, you know, almost like a complex. And, you know, there was a point where his mom said to him, you need to go find some black friends, like mm-hmm. point blank, just like you need to go find some black friends. And he didn't
check on that.
He didn't understand.
How can you be so delusional?
Yeah.
And you can act in such direct conflict with the faith that you claim to have.
Well, you know, white supremacy is a hell of a drug.
Holy it is. Fuck.
It is.
Yeah.
It's so true.
And I do
all that shit we just said an hour ago, throw it out the window. I don't want to sit next to these black people.
He said that he, at one point, his mom said this to him, and his mom was not raised Unitarian Universalist. His dad happened to be a minister in the faith, and, you know, there were some challenges to that being one of the only ministers of color within the you know, area, district, or whatever. But that he had said to, you know, one of the youth group leaders that his mom has said this to him, like, you need to go and find some black friends. And the white, you know, mentor figure said, oh, your mom just doesn't get it. And he was like, in reality, my mom had heard me the week before say the words, you know, I don't get black people. And she was like, you don't get black people? You need to go find some black people because, see, this is not going to really work out very well for you. And you know, he said it happens. I'm going to just read from his words real quick. He says, no teenager going through puberty and going to high school should have to take on the extra dimension of mental bullshit. I've heard similar stories from other people, especially black women, even those who aren't UU. They join white frats or sororities in college or go to private schools. Now they're slightly broken and find people who look like them to be scary or not as desirable. I don't think you can go through experiences like that without being damaged a little bit. And it's sad that the church has a system in place that does that unintentionally to kids. I don't think it's anyone's fault. I don't think that anything can be done about it. But if I become a parent, it's my job to protect my kids, right? I don't think I would allow them to be involved in the youth group at church, even though he would be raising them as that faith. So it's really you know, and then there was a lot of conversation that came from it. Of course, a bunch of fucking bullshit ass white people came in and tried to say, you know, oh, you're wrong. We love everybody.
You're overreacting. My feelings are hurt. So standing you have to on the stop side of love. The truth.
Can't we all just get along?
Oh my gosh, guys.
I love everybody.
Can't we get along just because my foot's on your neck? I mean, Jesus, why do you have to be so sensitive? Oh, black people.
I found a really passive aggressive way to find out which one of my white friends are racist.
Really?
Yeah. If I share with them like that list of like white privilege, and they
how do you introduce that? By the way,
you just share it with them. You just go like, "Bam, check this out." Right.
Yeah. You don't even like pre.
Clovis dropping bombs on people like, left and right.
Tiny seeds.
Yeah.
It's time to decide, motherfuckers.
If your friend responds with like, "That's so fucking racist," then you know. Then you know.
Mm-hmm. Then you know. Have your heart been broken,
Clove?
Yes, it has.
Oh.
Drew has a similar test. He says that if a white person has a problem with black brunch, they're racist. If you think black brunch is somehow offensive, you're a fucking racist.
Yeah. Oh, you know what?
I
do the same thing with
and your eggs.
When I say that I'm a feminist, if people look at if the dudes look at me funny, I'm like, damn, son, you misogynistic as fuck.
Right?
But honestly, like in a power of privilege or in a position of privilege, it's kind of your responsibility once you recognize what's going on to do those types of things because, you know, again, it's not you didn't directly perpetrate it, but you've benefited and you've probably played a role in it for. You know, a good part of your life.
Yeah.
It's just going back and fixing what you fucked up.
Yeah.
You can make the argument that you fucked up based on bad knowledge. Cool. I understand that. But you still fucked up. You still got to fix it. You know what I mean?
There's a woman that goes to our church that when she sees Drew, she physically runs in the opposite direction.
Why?
Oh, no.
Why?
Because I had to check her. And her bullshit ass privilege. She called my husband crying one day because he had posted that Dear White People video.
Yeah.
That the kids did, you know, that funny one. Like, oh, you have a black friend? You want a cookie? You know that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So she called him crying on the phone because, you know, she was really offended by it and she felt like she was being condescended to and it really upset her.
It's aggression.
So
understand.
She thought that was aggressive until I called this bitch back to tell her what aggression really is. I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Did you really call here to talk to my husband about a video that you're upset about?
You caught feelings over a video
for
that
real
was shared online.
For real. Like, I literally screamed into the phone, "Have you ever considered that it's not about you?" Like, wow. For real.
Yeah.
Like, get over yourself. So she physically runs away from Drew now whenever she sees him. It's quite funny.
So, Leslie, I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question for you. Like, when this interaction happened, was it like this?
Right? I says, bitch. I said, bitch.
It was pretty close to that. I think Drew, like, he was in the room with me, so I saw his eyes, like I was watching him like react to what I was saying. Mm-hmm. And his eyes at one point I thought they were gonna like pop out of his head because I think I said, "Do you even realize the level of privilege in the statement that you just said?" Like, I just said those exact words to her and he was like, "Holy shit, I can't believe you're just like fucking laying her out." But you know what? It just was just as she picked up the phone and like called him and like
right.
Her precious white tears. I just like, you know what? Just it's enough already. You don't get to do that. No, no.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. You shed princess tears. Okay.
Yeah. White women's tears are traded on the stock market. So.
It's the truth, man. Empires are built on
those for no reason.
Not for nothing.
Leslie.
Not for no video. So the last thing I wanted to talk about was revolutionary Ashley Yates herself, One Brown Blaze on Twitter.
She is so cool.
No, for real, I worship this woman. Like,
she's cool as shit. I actually had her on my show. It was a while back.
She's just
her and
like
Larry.
Insane. I love Larry too. I saw Larry this weekend. He's so funny.
How's he doing?
He's doing good. Although he's you know, one of the employees at Amnesty, so there's that.
Yeah.
Now.
Dun dun dun. And I'll probably update next week with kind of what the fallout was from that, if anything. There's been very little. They literally have been live tweeting the entire weekend. As soon as the protest action started during the plenary, that's the last tweet that they've sent. I'm not joking. I'm not joking. They have stopped their social media presence.
Are they?
That's how powerful blackness is.
Wow.
Anyways, Ashley was on a UN trip to Switzerland, and she actually storified her tweets. From Ferguson to the UN, kicked out edition, the tweets that relay how I got kicked out of the UN for essentially being too defiant. The encounter I had the night before that relayed to me how uncomfortable Swiss people are with regular black folks being in their privileged spaces, i.e. their entire motherfucking country. So she was there, and she had on her unapologetically black hoodie. And
all right. Because isn't there a law
in France?
No, in Europe or something?
I don't know anything about that. Anyways, she had a panel, and she did. She went to this panel, and they were talking about transphobia and a bunch of other things in the panel she was in. And it was great. It was about over-policing and anti-blackness. And then this happened. So the moderators at the... they had like laminated signs on each of the panels. And so one of the person's titles was president. That just was kind of like, I guess it's the language of the UN. And one of the people who had the president on the panel before mine, before hers, said that he could have, she could have his, like gave it to her kind of like, oh, it was great to meet you. You can have my sign. So as she walked out with the sign, a white man snatched it out of her hand. Speaking French, he tells me it's not mine and I can't have it. Thinking him confused, I tell him there's another one up there still, but this is the one that she brought with him. He refuses to give it back. Eventually, she walks out with a sign, and the man stalked her outside, calls another white man who demands I show him the sign. I tell him he can see it, but he can't have it. He looks and then tells me to give it to him or he will call security. I tell him to go ahead. He then proceeds to stalk me for 15 minutes as he waits for security to show up, like follows her around. They come and explain to them and ask them if they have security footage to run it back since my word isn't enough. They balk. I'm actually going to play a video that she took so you can hear what happened.
Several times, if I'm free to go. Am I free to go?
That's
am I free to go?
Not for the
are you legally detaining me? Are you going to try to arrest me again forcefully, touching me?
No.
Okay, then. Just so now you're stalking me. If you're not legally detaining me, you're stalking me. If you're not legally detaining me, this is harassment.
Okay, tu appelles la police,
madame? Oh, j'appelle la police. La police. We have to call the police, madame. The police.
Call whoever the fuck you need to call. Run them tapes back, though, boo. Run them tapes back. And like I said, I want legal representation, and I want those tapes ran back, and then I want an apology from all of you. And think I won't commission my government on this shit. You're supposed to be the UN's. You're supposed to be the UN. You're supposed to be a champion of human rights, but yet and still you're harassing me, you're stalking me, and you broke my nail by trying to forcibly arrest me when you had no right to.
They have the police waiting for you outside.
They can have whatever the fuck they want to have.
For us, it's a thing, you know?
Did you run the tape back? Did you run the tape back in room 21?
No, but
well, run the tape back, and then when you see that I pulled my sign out of my bag, I want an apology from everyone involved in this incident. Like I said, until you do that, you don't need to speak to me.
Which hotel you live in?
You don't need to speak to me,
madame. Please,
please. What? Why would I give you my hotel information?
It's not good for you.
Why would I give you my hotel information?
So, madame,
can why would I give you my hotel information?
Madame, can we talk
I don't need to speak to you without legal representation. I don't need to speak to you.
Just to be sure that...
Just to be sure
hotel,
that what?
There is some sign like this.
You don't need to see anything in my hotel, bruh. He won't even give me his name, and he's your supervisor, and you want my hotel information?
Yeah, because
absolutely not.
I want to know if it's in your.
Here's a word that you all don't hear a lot, and this is why this situation occurred. No, no, no.
They're like,
the silence, man.
Yeah,
the fucking silence. That's why she's a boss on the
They're
real.
They're like,
for real.
Anyone?
You wanna say I'm telling y'all something you aren't used to hearing. No, no, no. Like, for real. They just couldn't even comprehend this black woman telling them they couldn't do whatever the fuck they wanted to. They then revoked her pass to the UN and she wasn't allowed entry after this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Over a laminated paper
sign.
She was
being so aggressive.
Yes.
Right.
Over a laminated paper sign that they just decided to accuse her of stealing.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it goes back to white people and the privilege of it them feeling the slightest bit uncomfortable. It like even the incident with my car accident, where this white guy walks out fucking for no reason. What are you doing? We're literally getting ready to leave, and you say you need me gone as soon as possible. Cool. Let me take this number down. I'm gone, Chief. I'll see you later. But instead, you want to sit here and argue with me for another 5 minutes about me leaving when all I need is a fucking phone number. You weren't interested in me leaving. You were interested in fucking harassing me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It's privilege. It's the privilege to think you can just do and say whatever the fuck you want to whoever the fuck you feel like it without consequence.
Yeah.
But I'm white. I'm a good person.
I'm a good
you know what?
Person,
I think
swear.
That's what it is. That's what the good person is code for. But I'm white.
Yeah, you're right. That's the part that they missed there. I had I think it was Julie Unruly Rev who said that at a UU church she was talking to a minister who said that one of the congregants came up to her and said, you know, you keep preaching about this Black Lives Matter stuff and people that come here as visitors are going to not come back. And she said, and I didn't know what to say to him. And Julie said, you're supposed what you're missing is that there's a word that he left out, which is that when white people come here, they won't come back. That's what he meant when he said that to you. And you need to call him on that shit because it's fucked up. Because if a black person came or a brown person came or anyone who was a person of color, they would be like, oh, cool, look what they're talking about. This is interesting. So what he meant to say was he only wants white people joining his church. And you, as his minister, need to check that shit quickly.
Yeah, and I think that goes inherent with the I'm a good person. It's the I'm a good white person.
Right.
It's like I'm not one of those bad white people who you know, burns crosses on your lawn and shoots people in Arizona. I'm one of those good – I'm a good white person.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow.
Resident white person? Am I lying? Is this not normally what this means?
Yes, this is very accurate.
The whole passive aggressive racism.
Yeah,
too much.
I'm gonna start calling passive aggressive racism Canadian racism.
Canadian racism.
Canadian racism.
TM. We'll trademark that shit. We'll trademark it. We'll trademark.
But you know, it's funny. My brain just went. Although I say that, there's something about it though. Because it's not so in your face here that it's funny. I don't know. My brain is thinking
it's so subtle. You got to tip your hat to it sometimes.
Yeah, you do. You be like, that was good. Yeah.
You got that one off. That one.
Damn white supremacy.
You almost got me, but I see you.
Very clever.
Very clever racism. Oh, yeah.
There's some you're like, you gotta clap. it really makes you go, wow, that was like, did that just happen?
Yeah.
Like the diabolical ass shit.
For me, sometimes even when it's so blatant. I'm like, wow, you know what? It takes a lot of fucking conviction to be this fucking racist. Yeah. And this, like, holy shit, you've aced racism.
Yeah.
You've aced white supremacy.
Yeah, they're,
I gotta like, respect you said, for that, at least.
I've always said that there's nerds for everything. I'm sure that there's, like, racist nerds.
Racist
yeah.
nerds.
Yes.
Gosh.
Well, no, most a lot of people in the nerd community are racist.
That's true. That's true.
The nerds about racism, yes. I think there are.
Yeah, like, they specialize in that shit.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They're called the
neo-Nazis.
Mm-hmm. I was called racist almost just because I brought up the fact of race.
Right.
Oh, that's common. Good. Oh, yeah, that's so
like a
common.
Beautiful.
Oh,
that was the most beautiful.
You said race.
Racism I've ever
you
witnessed.
You brought up
my
race.
Life.
Why are you drying up
you
my rainbow?
Racist.
No, you know what? That reminds me because somebody have shown it posted this video. About Stop White Genocide.
Oh yeah, that's the thing I was talking about. It's
but
crazy.
What made it so funny is like the first thing that comes out of the first thing that comes out of this fucking lady's mouth is I'm beginning to mistake racism for anti-racism for anti-white. So do you equate white people with racist? Ah, there's your problem.
There you go.
Like, maybe you're telling on yourself. You don't even realize that.
Yeah,
right.
You didn't even get that part of it. No, for sure. That video is nuts.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what the guy called in to TWIB to talk about, to defend the video. And then they kept playing that white genocide song. And the best was Aaron, like, really, if I can shut him down, but it's just like, you don't even understand the word genocide. Like, he kept saying, so which white people are dying because of this? Because that's what genocide is. How are you guys getting hurt? Can you explain it to me? Because I'm confused.
When's the last time somebody invaded
talking about
white people for their land?
Lord. White people, other white people, actually, just other white people.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And the Moors.
And the Moors.
I'm sorry.
Don't forget
the Moors.
Goddamn Moors.
So that's one time in how many?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Man.
No. Ooh. Yeah, oh, that's what's so funny is when even when they say like we're losing, it's like motherfucker, are you looking at the scoreboard?
We're losing. What are you losing exactly?
But they're right because when you look at the scoreboard, those poor white people are losing the fucking game.
That's true, but that's nothing to do with
they're
black
losing,
people.
Yeah, but we're not winning. We're
that's the
losing
point.
Along with
we're,
them. It's
we're
like,
not losing
the same team. Yeah. I know we losing.
Y'all stupid. Get it together.
Meanwhile, the rich continue to get richer.
You're holding on to the last thing you want to think you can hold over black people is fucking killing you. That's what the truth is. Because it's just delusional at best.
Or the word reverse racism.
Oh, God.
It's like, wait a minute. It's like, oh, well, that's reverse racism. So let me get this straight. You have a problem with reversing racism, huh?
Right.
Like, oh, well, no, you're mixing my words, motherfucker. What does the word reverse? What does the word racism mean in conjunction with each other?
Yeah, it's just like the whole thing with the race together. You know, you guys have heard about that with Starbucks.
Yes.
This craziness. So it's just like they're, you know, whatever their director of. Corporate communications. He after this came out, of course, black people were like, this is the stupidest shit I've ever heard.
What was
you
the
know?
Gist? Because I
have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Oh, of course you don't, Clove. What the fuck was I thinking?
Surprise.
Surprise. Clove's under his rock, so don't worry about that. So Starbucks introduced this initiative called Race Together.
Yeah.
And they were basically a new initiative aimed at fostering communications about race relations. And their idea was they were going to have Starbucks employees write the words "race together" on their coffee cups or half of them, and then have these racial conversations with guests. Oh, sorry, that's me. And then have these race conversations with their guests. With the customers. That was the idea of it.
What? So, like, if you saw somebody come in and they were, and you made a guess, right? Like, you're like, I'm thinking they're Filipino. So I'm gonna talk about the Philippines and talk about Filipinos.
It wasn't clear. Is that what that is? It wasn't clear how it was supposed to work.
Yeah, I don't think they thought it.
They
through.
Didn't really think it through. Which was the whole point that black people were like, yeah, but that's the dumbest shit I've ever heard, right. And it makes no fucking sense whatsoever. I think Rain of April had the best response. She said, not sure what Starbucks was thinking. I don't have time to explain 400 years of oppression to you and still make my train. Hashtag race together. I mean, really, it was just the most ridiculous thing. So, of course, it was heavy criticism. Because it sounds just as crazy as you thought it sounded. Cloven, of course, black people said things like April said. The guy who is there, director of communications, deleted his Twitter because, quote, black people were attacking him, end quote.
Right. It's aggression. See?
Yeah. The aggression wasn't forcing black people to have to fucking tell you this common ass shit. That wasn't aggression.
My gosh.
Right. Maybe what he was getting was, you guys didn't think this through.
You're right. Right. But the thing is that I don't understand is, why is there not, okay, tell me what I'm missing. Tell me what I didn't see. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like that kind of reception to it.
Yeah.
It's like, just like, shut it down.
Yeah, yeah. It is. That is part of privilege as well. So you get to step away.
Right.
That's, you get to say, I'm going to disengage from this now, because it actually doesn't affect me and I don't have to affect me.
Not funny anymore. Bye.
That happens. Interesting. Mm-hmm. If you'd be like, okay, someone, especially in his position in such a big company, to say, okay, got everyone. What is it that I'm not clear about?
This is concern trolling. That's what this is. It is. This is concern trolling. It's completely on a corporate level.
Yeah.
Because, like Clove pointed out, it's never what am I missing. It's never, well, of course, Black Lives Matter. It's always to shut the shit down. No, why not all lives matter? Or why, you guys are being racist. I don't have time for this. I'm deleting my Twitter.
Right. I'm out of here, Nicole Sandler. I'm done. Yeah, it's always like that. It's always, I had a former Facebook friend of mine say, well, fine, you can have your people and your movement, literally. Like, and that's the attitude you get where it's like, I'm not racist.
Like, who gave you
and
permission? Then 16, I didn't need your permission.
Yeah, and then 16 tweets later, it's like, fine, you N-word. I'm out of here. Like, I'm not even kidding. Wow, this wasn't a friend. This was just a random person on Twitter. But that will be the progression. It will start off with them claiming they're not racist. And in the end, them calling me the N-word. I mean, not even kidding. It's that quick that it happens. Mm-hmm. That they've convinced themselves, like, I'm not a racist. And then as soon as I'm like, yeah, you are, because of this. And they're like, you N-word. I mean, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the fastest one I've ever had was when I brought something up about race, and he was like, well, you're the racist. You're the one bringing up race, nigger. Wait, what? Oh, fuck.
It's like,
how did it move this quickly?
It's like, how the?
Lightning speed. Lightning speed racism.
Fuck. That was like light year speed racism. I didn't.
How do you say two things in one sentence?
But that's the conservative mindset. Say one thing, say the next thing that it contradicts it completely, and then walk around like you didn't say it, was gold.
Everything's gold.
It's all good. The fear of the unknown. It's the fear of, I don't want to be.
It's white guilt.
Yes,
it's white guilt is blackness is powerful.
Yeah,
blackness is powerful, but just as powerful.
But
white
it's the
guilt.
Fear of the reality of like, oh, please don't break my web of belief. This is so comfortable. Mm-hmm. Everything's like, I do not want the veil to be open. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To go over my head.
Right.
Well, you guys are going to ruin our net.
Yeah, it's like.
No, bitch, we just want the net to be bigger. That's it.
Right.
That's it. We're just going to expand this shit. We're not pulling the rug from underneath you. We're just expanding a bit. Yeah, totally true. Totally true. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our sojourn. Why don't you guys tell us where everybody can find you and your awesome podcast that, thank Jesus, will be back live on Friday.
Yes.
The fuck, you guys.
Sorry.
You guys got to, like, backlog some shit or something. Live tweet a movie. Just throw a bone out here for people. I mean, really.
You can find us on Twitter at Chonilla. That's C-H-O-N-I-L-L-A. Or if you just Google that, and you'll find all of our different social channels and, you know, different ways that you can listen to the show, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, iHeartRadio,
if you're if you're interested in hearing me butcher your Twitter handle, you can follow me at Clovisaurus.
You can follow me at Shirasaurus.
Clove, though, or if you do, text him first.
Yeah. Yes. On Facebook.
Make sure that they have reminders attached to them.
Right. Yeah. Yes, and we're on live Friday nights from, well, we try to be on 9 o'clock, but from nine for a couple of hours every Friday night, and then if we're inspired, we may come in, you know, a second time during the week, but for the most part, we're live on Spreecast Friday nights.
Yes, and the chat room on Friday nights, it's a full-on kick-ass party, so
I'll just say that. We got our drinks, our coffee.
Everybody's chilling. It's like our whole music vibe. Yeah. There's live music, and it's funny. We learn about the Bible. It's fucking awesome, man.
Oh, yes. Bible scriptures.
Oh, yeah, coming up, we're going to do the Book of Joshua.
Oh, yes. Shit. I thought we were doing the one that has, like, the Psalms or something.
Oh, no, man. That's not until later. That's like,
oh, my God.
How are you going to do that one? Chapters. How are you going to do that one? I wonder.
I don't know. I'm going to have to figure something out.
I don't know how that's going to be interesting.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But basically, yes, Clove does an amazing job of Bible Scriptures 90210, where we would merge the Bible. And if Aaron Spelling wrote the Bible, how would it be?
It's so great. Yes. And let me tell you something. God is petty, y'all. I'm just telling you right now.
Oh, yeah.
He's got petty feelings, man. As F, for real.
Yeah, he's like a little girl, you know? He's sensitive.
He's real sensitive with his shit.
Hell bent on revenge.
That's old God, right? We got to remember that, you know, until we'll see you later.
We'll see
what happens. That's right. I saw there's a TV movie coming out. They had that one, The Bible. I don't know if you guys got it up in Canada, but.
Yeah. Is that the one with the.
Marcus.
The guy
from Survivor or whatever. Yeah. So they have another one that's coming out, and like the ads for it are ridiculous. I mean, I thought it was a joke. Like, it's so looked like a Saturday Night Live commercial. Like, I was so confused.
The United States is so religious.
It's so weird.
Yes, well, definitely join us. We have fun doing Bible Scriptures 90210. Plus, Clove has put them in ebooks. So if you are a premium registered user, you have access to the ebooks where it's, you know, word for word the way that Clove reads it. It's, you know, it's something that, you know, Sunday school, if it was presented like this to me, I'd have a reason to look forward to go to church.
Yeah, it's a lot more like. Well, it's just very interesting.
I'm cursing. Oh, yeah. Moses. Here's their getting frustrated with Moses and be like, what the hell, Moses? And it's like, man. Yeah. Can you imagine you're like a teen and it's presented that way? I'd be like, wow, this is crazy.
Oh, my God. I just went to the website for the Bible Continues. It's called AD. The Bible Continues. Mm. And the tagline is, the crucifixion was only the beginning. I think they stole your shit, quite frankly. I mean, if that doesn't sound like Bible scriptures, I don't even know. I don't know. The crucifixion was only the beginning.
In a world.
Yeah, come on. They've been listening on Friday nights. And Roma Downey, isn't she Canadian or something? She's like, that's the other, the Touched by an Angel chick.
Yeah.
She's something. She's not American, so
no,
it's
she's not. I think she's either
Maybe she's
Australian,
Irish or something. Or Welsh or
Australian
Irish.
Australian or something. Yeah, something. Yeah. I'm leaning towards Australia or British.
What are you talking about?
Touched by an Angel. She played Mary. Remember? Oh! How convenient.
How convenient.
Oh, my God. That's the best.
That's Mark Burnett's wife in real life.
Yes, it is.
I totally, yeah, because when we saw that, I was saying, like, oh, my God, Shirley, do you know what happened? She probably had this really elaborate casting call and just got so frustrated that nobody could,
you're very
could fill
intuitive.
In the part.
You should
nobody.
Watch the that's very intuitive of you.
Shut
you should,
the front door.
You should watch the interview that they did on Oprah talking about it. And she presented it that way.
Like, no she's way.
I was looking forever for Mary, and I couldn't find Mary.
And she's then my such husband a victim. Said,
why don't you do it? And she's like, well, I don't know.
I can't be vain about it. Right?
Like, girl.
And then didn't they have the devil looked exactly like Obama on that?
What a with that?
Oh, my God.
Anyways, okay, so did you go through everywhere to find you guys? Yeah, I think
yes,
so. Okay,
yes.
Awesome. We got those
sidetracked.
Just
Google Chonilla.
Yes.
Yeah, Google Chonilla. And make sure you join the Facebook forum. Group because that's really
active.
Awesome, too. So
yeah,
much stuff going
really
on.
I need to do that.
You
I
do.
Mean,
it's
a lot of the
so
groups
great.
I'm tired of.
No, this one is so good. People
like,
share.
Rick, you don't post anymore. Y'all be saying dumb shit all the time. I don't know what to do. I just tap the fuck out. Like I get five paragraphs into a tirade, and I'm like, you know what? Fuck these people. I don't have to deal with this today.
The great thing about the chat, about the forum too, for me is like the same. Like people seem to have their lane of what types of stuff they share.
True.
So you kind of get. It's almost like stations. Like. It's for nice. Me anyways, when I'm in there, like I find it so valuable because it'll be like stuff I would never even see, but I know that this person, when that kind of shit comes out, they're gonna post it.
Yes.
So I love
yes.
that.
Absolutely right. You know what Derek is gonna
yes,
put,
yes. I know what Howard's crazy ass is gonna throw in there. Like I know
Howard.
We should play against
Howard.
Yes, Howard.
Howard.
Like guess who posted it?
Yeah, guess right. who posted
get,
it.
Oh my gosh, yes, that would be so oh, funny. Yeah. Like, I know what Chaz is going to post. It's always going to be completely random. And, yeah. like, just everybody. Just it's funny to me.
We have our own, like, this is what got my attention. And that's yes. what's great about the Chonilla Forum. Plus, also, we love to, on the live show, share what we learn from the forum. Because right. we learn something from it, too. Like, hey, things that I wouldn't have not.
It keeps me up to date. Like it's, yeah. it is my front door to the
like,
internet.
Like I honestly consider myself. I'm like, oh, when I'm sharing stuff, I'm like, oh, if it's about Black Lives Matter, like I have to share it in the Chonilla Forum. That's my lane, so I have to make sure that I put that stuff in there because you know, so that I know it's there for everybody. So
yes, definitely.
It's funny.
Love it. Signing up right now.
You need to. You need to. Yeah. It's awesome. You never know what you're going to see, man. It's yes. awesome. It's awesome. Okay, so
to implants, butt implants.
Butt implants. The you know the first biracial Miss Japan. I mean, this is shit that yes. you just don't see everywhere. You'll see it in. You will see it in the Chonilla Forum.
It's left
ten,
and right.
10 songs.
I fucking love it.
That will school a new generation. Ain't nobody like Chaka Khan. That's what you're gonna see in it. You're gonna get all sorts of awesome stuff.
It's all over the place. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having us.
No, thank you. Thank you guys for coming on and taking the time and being here. Again, you can find the Ferguson Response Network on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search Ferguson Response. And you can also find us on our website, FergusonResponse.org. And if you're looking for actions in your city, you can go to FergusonResponse.tumblr.com. You can always find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack, M-A-C. You can find Ricky, not very often, but occasionally on Twitter at AUADOT.org. But you can always find him on facebook.com/AUA movement and on the website AUAmovement.org. And you can download the new Americans United Again app via Google Which, Play and
right. And that also has Android. The Ferguson Response Network,
yes.
where you can listen there too.
This show is there too, also.
I liked Americans United Again.
Whoop whoop.
Oh, yeah. The Americans United Again movement is awesome. So it's good. Their podcast is awesome. I'm telling but for real, Shirley, you have to listen to the most recent Hope episode. It's so cool. Yeah. And the doctor, or not doctor, but the guy that they interviewed is this guy from Great Britain who does this thing called tapping. And it's a way of like meditation kind of It's really interesting. You would like it. Both you and Clove would be very interested in it. It's kind of
And I think, what was it, episode 3 where we had Joshua?
Oh my gosh, that kid.
That fucking kid is amazing.
He makes me feel like an idiot. Christ. I was like, what? You did what? When you were how old? Like, what the hell have I been doing with my life? How many people are you? How many homeless people are you? Okay, I gotta go sit down. Tired for you, Joshua. No, that was a great episode. All of them have been great. They're so awesome. I think I'm coming on the next episode. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, Sheryl was telling me about that.
Get my positivity on.
It is all of her doing. She is the soul. She has soul.
Sheryl Show. Mm-hmm.
Creative control. Sheryl Show. There we go. Yeah. So in any of that show, the success of that show is just her and her vision.
It's just, I don't know any other podcast that only focuses on positive stories. Like, they don't do anything but positivity. And it just feels good when you listen to it. It really does. I just love it so much. So.
And in all honesty, it came out of how rough the AUA podcast is because I like to get down and dirty. I like to get into policy. I like to get into things that are, you know, kind of fucking depressing when you look at them, but they're problems and you just got to fix them.
Right.
So even I listen to the show just because I'm in a bad fucking mood. I'm like, you know what? Nope. Because I need to be reminded.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't anyone else who's listening to our podcast or just listening, watching the fucking news?
Yeah. It is. It's so great. All right. Well, thanks again, you guys, for joining us. And we'll talk to you Saturday. Well, actually, I'll chat with you on Friday night, of course. But then we'll be chatting on Saturday on the John, which is going to be fun. We have lots of cool surprises in store. Because last time you guys were on, we weren't that experienced. And now it's like, oh, now it's on.
Nice.
Oh yeah,
it's on now. It's gonna be good. All right, thanks everyone for joining us and have a great night.